then a Welcome to another episode of New Orleans Basketball and New Orleans Network podcast. As always, I am your host Rafael Rattler, joined by my fellow middle brother Gary Jermaine Rattler. What's popping with you, bro?
What up, bro? Feels like I'm a big Marvel fan. I like to reference Marvel on here a lot because that's who I am as a person. I grew up a Marvel fan, a comic book fan. And one of my favorite shows of the past couple of years has been Loki, right? And Loki teaches us a lot about timelines and variants and, other things about time happening over and over again. And one of the things that it teaches us is that those who do not understand history and do not respect it are doomed to repeat it. And that has been the theme of a lot of things in my life lately. As well as one of my other favorite quotes, which we'll get into later, but it just feels like I'm in a time loop of things that have gone on in my life over and over and over again. And I find myself opening up Twitter as the NBA season comes to a close, and I'm looking at things, tweets on my timeline. I'm like, is this from this iteration of the timeline, or did this happen a couple of months before? Is this the tweet that's just showing up right now because it has happened months before? And it's just crazy, man. It's just crazy. But, you know, before we get into everything, man, shout out to the WNBA draft happening tonight. Mm-hmm. It's going on as we speak right now. Shout out to the ladies that are being drafted and finding those dreams and having all that hard work kind of culminate in a dream come true. And so it's great to see, man. I might be a Chicago Sky semi.
I'm about to say, man. What's the Angel Reese? That's tough.
I love my Aces. They are my lifeblood. I love me some Asia Wilson, Chelsea Gray, Kelsey Plum. Those are like Becky Hammond. Those are like I'm riding. But man, Chicago went out and got Cordova from South Carolina, yeah, and Angel Reese from LSU, who, listen, they had some battles in the SEC. There was some nastiness, and not as teammates. Yeah. Man, that I know the Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston in Indiana is going to be the story, and everybody's going to want to see Brinks and Rekia Jackson from Tennessee, who have gone to LA. But man, that Chicago Sky team is going to be some rough riders, and I can't wait to watch them. So shout out to all of those ladies getting their draft in.
Guess who they're coaching?
But yes, Teaspoon the coach. Yes, Teaspoon did get her the head coach guy. It is crazy. Just everything connects. Madam Webb all over again. But anyway, other than that, man, everything's all good. New Orleans, the French Quarter Fest was great. Shout out to everybody who was out there and supported all the local businesses. It was a fun time. Not so much a fun time in other aspects of the New Orleans city, but we'll get into that. How's everything on your side?
Everything is blessed. Yeah, it was a tough last regular season if you are a New Orleans fan. And so let's just jump right into that. And actually, before we do so, make sure you guys are following us on Twitter, on X, on IG, on TikTok. That's In No Basketball, No E. Make sure you're liking the episode below. Again, we appreciate all the comments. We see people just following for the first time, just checking us out for the first time. We appreciate all the love. We're going to keep it coming to you as much as we can, but appreciate it all together. But yeah.
About last night.
So, of course, we talk about the MCU story that was written about, you know, this particular game. Last game of the regular season, Lakers are playing to stay out the 9-10. Pels are playing for a play-in game. Lakers embarrassed them earlier in the season. We'll go through it on and on. Everything aligned perfect. Even CJ said after the game, this is not how this is supposed to go. B.I. said this is not how this story was supposed to be written. And then the Pelicans tipped off the game. Like, literally, like, Derek, we talked about before the difference between this team on the road and at home. And mind you, not only is there extra emphasis on this game, not only is Brandon Ingram returning to this game, it's a nationally televised game. There's LeBron in it. All of those things played into why you should have every reason in the world to come out blazing with nothing to lose and leaving it all on the line. Now, I understand there was travel issues. Jen Hale talked about before the game that the Pels didn't get to leave to go home until very late the next day. And so they really didn't get enough time that you would normally get to your road team. I understand it's the first game after a longer road trip, and everybody knows those are typically the ones that have the letdown because people are comfortable. But
Yeah.
This was again, the energy, the pee, all that stuff, inexcusable. We talk about the three non-negotiable for this Pelicans team are what? Paint to great, ball movement, and playing ferocious defense. I have said this many times, and you and I have talked about this. When the Pelicans don't come out with it on their mind on the defensive end, and they don't give a damn on the defensive end, they're not that good. That's just what it breaks down to. Like, they are a defensive team. They are a top five defensive team for a reason. The offense has been up and down throughout the year because people have sat, people have done this or that and the other. So it's one thing to lose to playoff Bron, and AD is a mismatch for any center on the Pelicans roster. It's one thing to lose, but it's another thing to lose because you didn't defend. And you didn't give effort. Like, the Lakers looked like they were doing layup lines. Like, everything was easy to the basket, uncontested, wide open back cuts. Just way too many things that didn't work out. So we talk about the non-negotiables. So you didn't defend. You got out-assisted by the Lakers. And, oh, by the way, you got beat the hell up in the paint, losing the battle in the points in the paint by 26 points. So you did none of the things that you have been known to do to make you successful throughout the year. And so I guess my question to you is, like, was there too much on the game to the point where, I don't know, maybe nerves came into play? But what are your thoughts for coming out just flat in a gotta have it game?
It was ugly. It was ugly in the Smoothie King Center. You know, when I first got to the game, I was walking to the arena, and I was walking, and you could see it was not a New Orleans home game. It was, I don't know if people were at the first quarter fest or the Lakers just travel and have a lot of fans. And again, there was a lot on this game, but there was a lot of Laker purple in the Smoothie King Center. And you know, once you get into the arena, it felt like a different game. Like, you know, you get to you've been in the Smoothie King Center, when you get there and there's like a little bit of oomph on the game, you can feel it. You can look at the seats. You can see how many people are there early. And so there was a lot of attention on the game. Like you said, this was the nationally televised game. And this was the game that like had the most, really, honestly, riding on it in the Western Conference. Between, you know, are the Lakers going to get home court in the 9-10 series, or are they going to move up to the 7-8 series? You know, what's going to happen? Are the Pelicans going to, for the entirety of the play-in tournament has been available, the Pelicans have been in it. And if they were, if this was the year for them to break through that and get through and not be in the play-in tournament. And like you said, I mean, from the get-go, Raph, I had some food, and I felt like I ate. I had the crispy crunchy chicken. Shout out to crispy crunchy chicken. And I felt like I ate two tenders. And I looked up, and LeBron had 7 assists, and I was like, how? And you're watching the game, and his back is Rui Hachimura back cut after back cut after back cut. It's Austin Reeves beating people to loose balls. getting through people and scoring at the rim. It was AD just being the most athletic person on the floor, in a game that it has Zion and LeBron. Like, AD was just – he just looked more athletic than everybody the Pelicans could throw out there. And the Pelicans just looked like they were resigned to this season being defined by living in LeBron's shadow, because it seems as though every time he steps on the floor, you know, against a Pelicans team, and he thrusts, you know, he has this shadow that he puts on over the game. No matter where you're playing, it could be in Vegas, it could be in LA, it could be in New Orleans. It does not matter. LeBron has a shadow over the game. And the Pelicans, for whatever reason, you know, they just find it difficult playing in that shadow. And so when you have guys, when LeBron has 7, 8, 9 assists in the first quarter, you are failing at a game plan part of the game when he is finding guys that wide open every single time. And it just seemed as though they weren't on a string, they weren't communicating. And part of it is, and you know, we talked about this, and we'll talk about this later. We talked about this on the last podcast. Brandon Ingram being thrust back into the starting lineup in the last game of the season with everything on the line, while you know, you had a starting five that was working with Trey Murphy and CJ bombing away threes, it threw a wrench in everything. And we said it. We it wasn't so much that we were saying that was the right play. We both knew it was coming. Brandon Ingram was not coming off the bench. He was going to step in and start. And the Pelicans, you know, if you've been paying attention to all of the analytic people and all of the lineup data people, the starting five has not been the greatest, right? It hasn't had a great plus minus, and a great net rating this entire season. And so when you bring that element back in, and he's coming off of an injury, and he's coming, working himself into, you know, basketball shape and conditioning shape, in a game with so much on the line, it's you're gonna see this, right? And then you bundle that together with a locked up, up and ready, a gamed LeBron and Anthony Davis. I mean, it just was a lot, and it was very, very discouraging to see the Pelicans come out with everything on the line, with so much going. Like, this is game 82. Like, this should be it. Like, leave it all out there. And you just didn't see it, save for, you know, a small little make you feel good run that really didn't do anything for the game. So it just was dispiriting. And I think, you know, the same way that the Pelicans got a wake up call in that in season tournament game, you know, this needs to be a wake-up call, whether it leads to a win tomorrow or a win, you know, in the second game, or if you don't make the playoffs at all. Like, either way, this should be another wake-up moment for the Pelicans franchise, the players, the front office, as well as to see that this roster is nowhere near the perfection or the cohesive unit that they think that it is, and that, you know, some of these wins have shown to make the Pelicans look in some of these wins. And so it was tough. It was ugly to watch. But the good thing about the work that you do all throughout the season is that you get an opportunity to play in more games, right? And play in other games. And so the sport of basketball is unforgiving in a sense, but it is. The NBA is also forgiving in the sense that you have another opportunity to put that behind you. We saw what the Pelicans did against after the in-season tournament, at the showing in Vegas. You're going to have to do it now, or cool, you're going to quickly be faced with the end of your season and a lot of uncomfortable questions.
Yeah. As far as, like, the Willa Green piece, yes, I do think that someone was in the comments saying B.I. should come off the bench. And, yeah, it made sense. The minutes where he got in with the second unit, it was just him on the court with other people, were the minutes where he shined, right? Because, obviously, if you're working in the gym to get back, you're just working on scoring by yourself, not necessarily facilitating other people and things like that. And those were the minutes where he shined. But even still, The Pelicans are 4-15 when they allow the other opponent to score at least 120 points. The Pelicans are not a high volume, high scoring team like that. They don't. If they're getting in a track meet, they're probably not going to win, right? Because of the lack of cohesiveness between the offense and what they've been able to establish so far. So what it boils down to, again, the Pelicans were outworked, right? Like, from an older, you know, more experienced team, they were the first ones on the floor. They were the first ones to the loose balls. They were the aggressors. And so even if you play the right people, like Willie Green was trying everything. Cody Zeller got minutes. JB got – it didn't matter. Like, none of that shit mattered, right? None of it mattered. Because the Pelicans didn't play with heart. The Pelicans weren't the aggressors. The Pelicans didn't defend. That is a player's thing. That is something that you don't have an excuse for. You can't blame the coach for it. That was a mentality thing. And yeah, there were moments, to your point, where people kind of stepped up to try to meet and try to turn things around. But you're already down 20. Like, what are you doing at that point? Now, they threw the game away, literally, had 19 turnovers. So, like, literally could not hold on to the ball. But here's where I have the biggest problem. Now, we just talked about how Zion has been great in this road trip. It's not so much that Zion struggled to score. It was his mentality, right? Like, I don't mind the jump shots that he tried. He tried to do something different because LeBron was literally 2 feet in the paint waiting for him to come, not even guarding him on a jump shot at all. So I don't mind that. He said after the game, and I talked to you about this. He said after the game, personally, I don't think I was aggressive enough. And Garrick, I could not agree more. It reminds me of, like, back in the day when, like, I was first guard Jordan and Kobe and Jordan and all that stuff where, like, it took a couple times. Like, even LeBron had his moments, which, again, I would never forget because the people in Dallas would never let me forget, had moments where he kind of froze up a little bit in the playoffs. Again, the last time you played in a game of any significance, the thing that turned your season around was you getting blasted on national television versus this team. And I feel as if in this game versus the Lakers, Zion was in a better shape, but there was still a little bit of, like, shookness when it's like LeBron is I am the number one concern for them, and LeBron has me. And I feel like there was too much respect. Like, listen, LeBron is again, you and I talk about it. We think he's the greatest player to ever play this game. I understand. But he's also pushing 40. There was like one or two examples. But other than that, I don't understand why Zion didn't go through LeBron. Like, he was looking for fouls and kind of doing some of the things with the ball. When a player as smart as LeBron, he's waiting for you to turn so that he can swipe down on the ball versus just going through it. And I think that that's something that, again, you saw a little bit toward the end of the game, but something that he has to start with jump for it. Listen, all due respect to LeBron, I am going through your chest, and if we lose that way, we are just going to lose with me offensive fouls. I think that that's something that needs to get tweaked in him. The other part is, like, I know he had close to the triple-double with the 12-8-8, but, like, there were too many rebounds, too many loose balls, too many defensive possessions where earlier on the road trip, you saw Zion getting to those before anybody else. And I just didn't see, like, because he didn't have it going offensively, I just didn't see that same level of urgency on the defensive side that has made everyone talk about Zion this past week or so. And so, again, to the point, this is one game, and really, you and I talked about it before yesterday, you get three shots to get in. You already blew the first one. Three home shots to get in. You blew the first one. Now you got another one tomorrow, and God forbid you lose that one, you get another one versus maybe Steph or maybe the Kings again, right? This is the opportunity for you to correct that mentality. Again, it's not always that you lose. It's how you lose and how are you going down. And so I expect, again, Brandon Ingram just coming back. It's hard to look at him and be like, raise the team up on your first minute backs or you played short minutes. And even then, he had an impactful scoring output, but not necessarily the stamina and conditioning to give it on both sides from that end. So I'm not looking at him. I'm looking at the rest of the team, the Zion in particular. How are you going to respond when you get to play against the team that just embarrassed you again at home again. So season is over. Regular season is over. We will have a pod that breaks down the season whenever that ends. Hopefully a longer time than not. But let's talk about the regular season all together. Last week we talked about CJ McCollum being the MVP of this team, and I would think so. Again, he's had to do the most altering. He's had to do the most adjusting. And really, he's fit in and stepped up in moments, or I don't think the Pelicans have 49 wins without a CJ McCollum. What's something else that you took away from this season, good or bad, that, again, you may see correct itself in the postseason, or maybe you go into the offseason thinking maybe something needs to be done here?
Well, I think there's a really good and a really bad. And I think that both, should be looked at as to how we continue this good thing, and then how do we address this bad thing. So I'm gonna start with the good thing because we always like positivity, like a little positivity on this. Zion being third on the list of games played this season, I think that is something to be celebrated, right? To give him his flowers for that, because all this season, the whole season, even before this season, it's been, can you stay on the floor? Can you, can you be healthy? Can you commit to the things that will make you the best version of yourself? And he came into this season not showing that, right? He still came into the season taking baby steps, right? He came into the season not really the best version, right? If you just look at him, like we've been talking about, look at him in that season tournament game versus the Lakers, like physically look at him, and then physically look at him versus game 82. He looks night and day, but he stayed on the floor. He missed a couple of games for personal reasons and little things here and there. That Spurs game, which comes back to haunt the Pelicans, is the one that everybody's like, could you have played that game, right, with no structural damage to your finger? Could you have played that game and got that game, and you wouldn't have to worry about, that six seed could Phoenix win and could you win on the last game? You wouldn't have to worry about that had you had won that Spurs game. But he's been on the court for, I think it was 70. I think it's 70. Is it 70? I think it's 70 games this season. And, I mean, that is what you want, right? That is what makes the Pelicans a great team, is you being on the floor, the best player on the floor. I think what he needs to do is bottle some of what he went through the middle of the season with the in-season tournament, and that whatever that was that kicked into him for that run after the in-season tournament, bottle that up, take that into the offseason, whenever it is, right? We're not saying that whenever the offseason begins. And apply that and come into the season the way that you are leaving out of the season. And that way, I think the Pelicans could have won some of the games earlier in the season. And maybe you're not dealing with, I'm thinking of those Utah games, those Grizzly games, some of those games that you should have won, the Chicago games. Like, you should win these games if you want to be this guy that you say you are, that everybody believes you can be. But being on the court is the biggest part of that. So I think that is something that Zion should be proud of, and he should invest in that and make sure that is now something that happens, right? That we aren't surprised by. Like, that should be the last reason. Obviously, injuries happen, but the way that he took care of himself, the way that he was available for his team, want to see that moving forward. Now for the bad thing. And I think we all can see and see it. The center position has to be addressed. The center position was a problem all season long. I think no matter where you stand on the Pelican season, positive, negative, good, great, I think everybody can see that center position is something that is just a mess right now for the Pelicans. And it's not so much JV's ability. It's we've gone right back into some of the things that we saw last season that made us say, okay, well, JV is obviously away from the Pelicans because they're not going to bring him back where he leaves for nothing, but they're not playing him. They're not playing through him. They're not doing anything with him. So they're going to trade him this offseason, meaning last offseason or before the trade deadline. And then they like went to using him and featuring him. And he had a run where he was the Iron Man for the Pelicans. He played in, I think, every single game or maybe missed one or two this season, but he was the professional. We did a podcast. We were like, oh, yeah, he definitely has played himself into a new contract. We were all in because of the way that the Pelicans were using him, the way he was being featured. And then all of a sudden, it just went away. It just went away. His usage went away. The way they were using him, his involvement, his minutes, they all just went away. And when that happens, you're forced to look past JV as what can help you. And you look at that center position. The only other seven-footer you have is Cody Zeller, and God bless him. The man is going to enjoy retirement very, very soon. And then also you have Larry Nance, who, again, is a undersized big man, but an under-athletic wing player. So you just, like, have him as this tweener. And again, it's not so much Larry Nance because I think there are things that he could contribute to a team. But the Pelicans use Larry Nance as a backup center. He should be used as a break in case of emergency. We're playing a small guy at center, so you get out there and give us some minutes. Right. Not like, okay, when JV sits down, this is the next person up. And he has just been thrust into a role where he is not being utilized well, and it's detrimental to the team because he gets beat over and over again on the boards because he's 6'7". He is shorter than Trey Murphy. I've been tweeting that all season. I don't think people understand that. He is shorter than Trey Murphy. Of course, he's not going to give rebounds over 6'10", 6'11", seven-footers who are jumping. Of course he is not. You know, does he have, like, veteran IQ and ways to play and ways to affect the game? Absolutely. But not as your backup center. He had a game where he played 33 minutes. Larry Nance should not be playing 33 minutes on anybody's team. If we're talking about an effective team trying to make playoff pushes. So the center position has been a mess. We called all season for the Daniel Gaffords of the world. And we even asked for Bismack Biyombo just as a taller guy who can stand there and just be 7 foot and be tall in front of the rim. And it just never was addressed. David Griffin used rim protection by word, not the idea, not, oh, we need to get bigger. He used the words rim protection in the offseason presser last offseason and did not address it at all. And it has come back to bite the Pelicans in some of the most important games this season. And so I think the center position will be addressed. We're going to talk about it some more. But I think that is the glaring hole. There are obviously things that the Pelicans could do differently, all of that. But until you get someone who is willing to put a hand up at the rim, you're going to get Rui Hachimura dunk compilations every single game.
Yeah. I'm not even going to get started on the center position. You know how I feel there. We will talk about that in the offseason because the Lakers are the perfect team to highlight this. And again, it's not a Larry Nance fault. He's being put in position to fail. And again, it's been a glaring issue all year long. And so at some point, you got to address it. This of the Cubs, I think the soonest you could do anything there is this coming offseason. So we'll see there. I'll take the same approach as you, one good, one bad. So I guess from a good standpoint, Fred Vincent needs a raise. I know he was applying for like head coaching jobs or whatever it may be. The Pelicans need to double down his contract somehow because the year after you go from saying, hey, this team doesn't have a whole lot of good three-point shooters and they need to shoot better, where they finish top 10 in three-point percentage. Herb Jones' growth, which I don't know how much of that is Fred Vinson. I don't know how much of that is Herb Jones. I don't know how much of that is a combination of both. But his ascension by jumping his three-point shot over 10% in one season and literally becoming the exact player that a Zion Williamson needs. Like, literally, the only people keeping the game close in the first half was Herb catch and shoot threes. That's a wild place to be when you got CJ McCollum, Trey Murphy, and B.I. on the court. But that's the player that Herb has developed into. But not just him. Jose has increased his three-point percentage. Najee has increased his three-point percentage. Larry Nance has increased his three-point percentage. Like, they've all been better in those areas. And so, again, you got to keep him around until you fix Dyson's jump shot. Because if Dyson becomes Herb-esque from the three-point line, you really going to have some problems. And so, from a good standpoint, again, I think that was the most evident thing I took away from this regular season, that everyone got better in that particular era, which was a weakness for this team last year. Now, here's the other part. We talked about B.I. and Zion trying to make that – make the 1A and the 1B fit seamlessly. And I think, again, you never really got to see – which it, we cannot be going on at the end of year five and saying you've never really gotten to see prime B.I. and Zion together. Because when B.I. had it going, Zion wasn't there yet. B.I. gets hurt, Zion goes Super Saiyan, and B.I. comes back later. So you've really still never been able to have those two perfectly mesh. I do think Brandon Ingram's a player that can adapt his game and that can shoot more catch-and-shoot threes. I do think he's a player who can thrive in transition if he's bought into that world. Those are two things that the Pelicans were doing on the road while B.I. was out that was causing them to success, taking the ball out of the rim and going and shooting catch-and-shoot threes. Two things that B.I. hasn't really fully bought into yet, but I think it's something he's capable of. And again, I always go back to – well, if you're not – again, B.I. has a contract coming. This is the worst year for him to get hurt like this. He has a contract extension coming up. Who are you getting that's better than Brandon Ingram on the other side? And I just fail to get there. But those two have to mesh in a better way. And, again, we'll potentially see that next season. Now, here's my question to you. Through all of this, most wins in a season – or in a season for what? 10 years, 17 games over 500, most world wins in the NBA, franchise record every night for points and threes and all that stuff. Willie Green low-key got a contract extension, and nobody knew about it. Will Guillory retweeted the article from The Athletic that was posted by Sam this morning. How would you grade Willie Green's season? Because he – even still, it's crazy words. Even still, he didn't really get his two best players humming and hawing at the same time all season long, but still came up with this successful season. How would you grade it? And, like, what are your thoughts about the extension?
Yeah, I think that no one knowing about that contract extension is quite telling about how, you know, the Pelicans, you know, feel about Willie Green and his extension, right? You give him that extension because he has, you know, listen, there are a million things that Willie Green can get better at. There are a million things that he does wrong. One thing that you can say is that he does not improve his wins, right? And when you're going to a contract extension and Willie Green has an agent, when he comes into there and he says, hey, my guy has gotten you guys more wins each season since he's been here. You cannot say, no, you didn't. Those are tangible things that are found. You can't say that. And so you give the man his contract extension. So for this season, I'll give him a B+. And I'll give him a B+. And here's why I give him a B+. It is not Willie Green's fault that 49 wins this season gets you a date in the play-in tournament. It's not. It is. I've been tweeting about it all this season because he, like, 10, there are 10 teams over 500 in the Western Conference. One of them, like, you had to win so many games this season to be there in the playoffs. Any other season, 49 wins last season get you like the 4 or 5 seed in the West. It was a hellacious year in the West because you got some generational tanking and some spots in the East and down there in the West. Like, with the way the Pistons played this season,
the worst year to take.
Hornets played this season, yeah, and the Spurs, you know, obviously they beat the Pelicans, but, like, they didn't have a good season at all. Like, there was some generational losses. And so a lot of the teams feasted up at the top. And so, you know, he got them through a lot of the bad things this season. Now, some of the bad things that happened was his fault. Rotations were still not great. You know, the offense never really got to where, and part of it is because people were out. You know, you have to throw that in for when you're talking about coaches. Like, eventually, like, you want this team to win games, but if you're not at full strength, regardless of what it means, whether it means like the shooters are not there, or your superstar players isn't there, or your defensive ace is not there, there's just a lot of things that he got them through. And I think you have to give him credit for that. But there were a lot of things that he did not do well. I know everybody's upset and mad and things like that. You can't be too upset about yesterday's game, because that was more of a effort thing. And I don't really know if the coach can get out there and guard LeBron and jump up to AD. Also, he doesn't get to pick the players on the team, so he has to play with what he's given. Now, could he have done a better thing than y'all, you know, a better job than that? Absolutely. You know, could he have some things that he could have done better? Absolutely, no question about it. But I think, you know, I think he did a decent job this season. And I think, you know, again, when you're putting wins on paper, and you go into a contract extension and you tell the people, I every year I've had something go wrong with my roster, but I have wins. There's really nothing you can say other than, yeah, you're right. Here's the win. So I'm cool with the contract extension. He has a lot to play. A lot to show. You know, I think once this roster gets transformed again, you know, there's going to be even more pressure on him, because at some point, you know, you can't keep doing all of this and now it doesn't show on you. But I think he did a reasonably okay job today, and I would say a B+ is probably, maybe even a B-, just because, yeah, maybe, but B- is probably more better. Yeah, B- is where I'm at with his.
Listen, I've said this before. You can't take the record-breaking performances. You can't take the most wins and the most. You can't take all of that away and just say, yeah, but he lost these games. It's part. The coaches are not finished products, just like players aren't as well. And yeah, there was a lot of moments throughout this season that you feel as if maybe if they handled them differently, maybe they would have won. But there's also a lot of moments in the season where the players could have lost the game as well. And so I think that there is – no one talks about how good the coach is when the team's doing well. They always talk about how good the coach is after a loss like that. Now, nobody was talking about, yay, Willie Green after the four-game road trip. Everybody's talking about Zion and CJ, right? There's a balance between both. And so on one hand, don't say you got the most wins since whatever amount of time. And then also say your coach is absolutely horrible. He's the worst in the league. Because there are some teams in the NBA that don't have as good of coaches, that don't vibe with their players, that none of those things exist from a coach down. But altogether, again, I don't know. Like, part of me says, like, there were some things, some adjustments he was making toward the end of the last season too. Again, I don't blame that Lakers loss necessarily on Willie Green. I think that if you win that game, then everyone's saying, well, Willie Green had a great season. Right, from that standpoint. So I think again, recency bias is definitely a flex, but there's definitely room to grow. And to your point, there's some tough questions that's going to have to be answered very quickly. Trey Murphy is due for an extension. Brandon Ingram is due for an extension. CJ McCollum makes $33 million a year at age 32. Like, JV is a free agent. There are some things that you're not going to go into next season saying this is the same roster like we've been saying the last 2 years. There are things that have to be addressed, and so we'll see when that time happens. Now, the regular season is over. It's over. The postseason is here. One way or night, welcome to the play-in yet again, Pelicans. The Pelicans get another shot tomorrow versus the Lakers. Same team. They didn't leave, probably. Anthony Davis had a back spasm because he got too many wide-open dunks, and he wasn't used to that. I'm sure he will be available for the game tomorrow.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're dealing with the same issue, except if you would have won last time, thank God for Phoenix, they beat Minnesota. You would have had a Minnesota. But this time, congratulations. If you beat the Lakers at home, you get Denver in the first round. What are you looking for? This is chance 2 of 3. What are you looking for out of this matchup and out of this game to go differently for the Pelicans to ultimately secure a playoff spot?
Zion has to be pissed off. Zion, there is no Willie Green can't save you. You know, all that other stuff can't save you. If you are staring greatness in the face and you are the best player and you are the generational talent and you are the guy that you want to be the face of the league and do all of these things, you have to show some pride and some respect and say, damn it, I'm tired of playing in LeBron's shadow and being the little, you know, the little person, the little brother. Like, you have to do that. And so if Zion, listen, the Pelicans are not going to win a lot of games with Zion, a lot of important games against the best teams with Zion going 12-8-8. Like, you need to take at least 20 to 25 shots in this game and show some heart and things, because the team isn't going to go anywhere unless Zion is the one putting his foot down and saying enough of this, right? And we've seen it. We've seen it. Him on the road in Phoenix was the best game I had ever seen. Anybody has ever seen him play as a professional. He was locked in. There was defensive intensity. You know, there was attention to the details defensively. But he had a look on him. And I think we all know the look. When he starts to make that little snarl and that little flexing and things like you, that's when you know he's in there. And I just didn't see any of that yesterday. And so this is an opportunity, and it's funny, poetic justice, that you get to do it against the same demons that were facing you this whole season. You get the another chance. And so if you want to put that to bed, put that to rest, the narrative in the NBA can change overnight. And if you want to come out and do that same lackadaisical non-energy plays and Zion just kind of sleepwalking through the game, then guess what? The game is on TNT tomorrow, and you know Chuck and Shaq gonna let you have it. And so you have to come out with some attention to detail and some aggression and some heart and some fight, because if not, LeBron is gonna stare you down once again, and once again, you're going to look like you're folding, you know, in the face of greatness. And so this is yet another opportunity. It's 2 of 3. But he has to come out and grab this team and put him, like Willie said, put him on the shoulders. And heavy is the head that wears the crown. You know, you want everybody to step up and play the game that they're known to do. But we've seen that the Pelicans sometimes don't do that, especially at home. But Zion has to be the one to get them out of this. And I think that he's going to play a lot better. We don't really see him have a lot of back-to-back-to-back bad games or terrible games. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what type of mentality and what kind of urgency that Zion, like, I want the Pelicans to do it. The whole team needs to come out with it. But they don't go anywhere if Zion is not engaged and on both sides of the ball and pushing – pushing the team forward.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. Again, what do the playoffs come down to? Do you have the best player on the court that night? That's what it comes down to. And again, I understand the respect for LeBron James. But shit, he's keeping you back from your first playoff series. So what are you going to do about it? Like, again, at this point, again, Brandon Ingram's coming back. He's working himself back into game conditioning. Everyone has to be better. The rotation, we were just talking about the rotations being so crisp, and they were early every time. The help was coming from the right place every time. All those things were happening. The Pelicans have been on the top half of controlling the basketball and not turning it away. They threw the ball away 19 times last game. I get it. There's a whole bunch that can be cleaned up from a team aspect. Gang rebounding. You know you have the shorter team. You're all going to have to attack the boards. But number one, it comes down to him. Like, are you going to step up to the plate and carry your team there? Are you going to go out fighting, right? Because, again, if he sets the tone, there's no excuse from anyone else not to be up on pick and roll. I saw so many people die on screens versus the Lakers once they got a lead. If he's jumping the screen and he's attacking on defense, everybody has to be attacking it. So, again, it's something where it's going to come down to, do you have the haves or do you have the have-nots? And if not, you could be staring at LeBron James to Steph Curry in elimination game with your season on the line. So, again, it is – there's no more talking about it. There's no more excuses. The Pelicans have an opportunity to get in the playoffs again. What are they going to do with it? What you got left for the people, Garrick, as we go into shot number two of the Pelicans' chance to make it to the playoffs?
Yeah, you never know what people are going through, so give someone a smile today. Yes, everyone in the comments, we do read the comments. We see the very constructive conversation going on over there. I understand, you know, that Willie has his the people who like him and the people who dislike him. I don't know Willie Green from anybody. He doesn't know me. So, no, I don't know Willie Green. I'm not friends with Willie Green. I just don't think that he's the worst coach of all time. That's all. But, yes, we do see your comments on the side. And, you know, I appreciate the constructive criticism and the things coming from there. But, yes, this is another yet another opportunity for the Pelicans to go and make a mark and make the playoffs. It's 2 of 3. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if you win – you get Denver and you strap your boots up and get ready to play the league MVP and the person who is most feared in the Western Conference. But if you lose and you go play that third game, then you're playing very, very, very dangerous games and flying really close to the sun as far as missing the playoffs entirely. So I think you see a better version of the Pelicans tomorrow. You had better seen a better version of the Pelicans tomorrow, and we'll see. Roll the ball up, tip the ball up, and we'll see where it goes. But as always, follow myself at Garrick_Rattler. Follow my brother at Raphael_Rattler. Follow the page at NO Basketball No E. And most importantly, subscribe to New Orleans.Basketball, and we'll see you guys in the next one.